Welcome to Switchcast Season 6. We are approaching the end of this season. Just a few more delicious episodes, and then on to Season 7, likely after a small vacation. Switchcast is the podcast where we know what we're talking about, despite evidence to the contrary. The evidence has not been made public yet, though.
I don't think it's necessary. No. I think, you know, we're here for the fun. People need to know details, how accurate we are. We're fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is my co-host, Tyler Sanders. I am, of course, your other co-host, Doug Tabbitt, co-manager and co-manager.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just like The Office, and our producer, Ethan Hufnagel. He's like the, I was going to make an Office reference. Who's the CFO? Never mind.
David Wallace.
David Wallace. Yeah. Thank you. He's the David Wallace here. Pops in every now and then and tries to make sure we don't go off the rails.
And he's generally pretty annoyed when we do go off the rails. I got to be honest. There's a sigh. There's been a head lowering.
I got to say, Patreon has it good. I was reviewing one of our videos, which I don't often do. I don't like watching myself. I'm amazed you guys like watching me or listening to me. But anyway, I noticed he cut some of my jokes. It was that good. Oh, yeah. So what you're paying for on Patreon, you're getting unfiltered, unedited.
Did I do that?
I think so.
Ethan's like, who, me?
I would never. Saving face, Doug. I'm saving face.
Oh, no. They don't know what they're missing. If you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, review. It all helps us out and helps other people see the podcast. Please also support our sponsors and or sign up for Patreon, where you get exclusive content. As mentioned before, unedited shows live if you want to, if you're not busy on Tuesday evenings. And bonus episodes. Our Patreon topic this week is paid or incentivized car reviews. Are they worth it?
Find out more at 11.
Is it truly unbiased? I think we answered our own question with that question, but we are truly unbiased here. Yeah. Nobody paying us for our opinion or, you know, to buy our opinion. They have tried, but the amounts were too small.
Yeah, if I'm going to sell my soul, better be worth it.
Laugh. The amount of times that people have asked me to do unscrupulous things, sometimes little, just like, hey, can you change this amount on the bill of sale so that I don't have to pay as much taxes? At no point, and the worst ones were somebody tried to pay me to not publish information that I had regarding damage on a GT3 RS that nobody else knew about.
Ah.
And somebody who owned the car tried to offer me money to not publish it. But all the people who were interested in buying the car didn't want to pay me for the information either. Huh. Like, they're benefiting from it. I'm saving their butt. Yet they want it for free, but then it's worth more to be unscrupulous than to be scrupulous, right? Yes. Anyway, so he actually offered me money. Every other time, it's just been like, hey, can you do this thing and put your integrity online and potentially do something illegal for which you could go to jail? Can you just do it to do me a solid?
So I can save a few grand on sales tax.
Right. Like, and I kind of want to be like, okay, I'm not going to do it anyway. Like, if I was, my integrity would have a price. I'm not just going to, like, give it away for free. Like, you want to at least offer me half of what you're saving?
And even then, it's probably not enough.
No, it's not.
But still,
there is no amount that's enough. Yeah. However, like, at least tempt me. there's got to be a benefit to it. What is fueling this podcast, Tyler?
Well, today we've got Doug has left the building. We're going to drink some Knob Creek 18. Oh, boy. Oh, no, I forgot about this. Might need a wine key.
Is it so old that you can't get the cork out?
Progress is maybe being made.
Oh, no.
I might need a wine key, Doug. I have had this. So this is a batch one Knob Creek 18, which is a few years old at this point.
He's struggling. Might we need to pause the show to get
We are not moving on until he gets this. We are not moving on.
I'll, like, destroy my hands.
It's worth
it. I need a wine key.
We need a background music.
You just call me a quitter.
Cue the Jeopardy soundtrack.
I'll have to find a royalty-free iteration of Jeopardy.
Does that exist?
Yeah, somewhere.
Who is hosting Jeopardy now?
I believe it's still Ken Jennings, isn't it?
I don't know. Who is Ken Jennings?
He was the guy from like 2004, 2000. I might be.
Oh,
wrong.
He like won it a bajillion times.
He was one of the greats. I think he didn't win the most money, but he had the longest running streak, or at least he did for a while.
Gotcha. Is it better or worse than the Whose Line Is It Anyway transition from Drew Carey to...
Oh, what was her name?
Who's hosting it now?
I can't think of her name. What a great run that show had with Drew. What a funny show.
Aisha Tyler.
Okay.
It's got to be better than that transition.
Sure.
Drew Carey is irreplaceable. Wasn't there somebody before her?
No.
That was a host?
No, it went off the air for a while. And when they brought it back in its new format, she was the host. I didn't even know it was still on.
Okay. All right. Well.
Oh, here we go.
He is back with a corkscrew.
I appreciate you guys vamping for me. We'll see if I can. I should have done this upstairs. So I wasn't. Are the cameras rolling, Ethan?
No.
That's good. I don't need somebody giving me a hard time for this.
Yes.
Oh, such a weak cork pop. After all that.
All that. Wow.
But anyway, Doug, I think you might enjoy this. This is only 100 proof. 18-year-old Knob Creek. It's delicious.
You're not supposed to tell me the proof.
Ah, shoot. Yes. I messed up. I'm fired.
This is my thing. I don't know the notes or the whatever. What are other fancy whiskey words?
The taste, the notes are usually just what I call it. I'm just going to leave. Should I just leave this in the shop with the wine key?
Hints and allegations. What we learned about Aisha Tyler while you were gone. Not really.
Nice.
Okay.
Appreciate you guys vamping.
Let's talk about cars.
Ethan, does this look
dumb? Going downhill fast.
Does this?
No, it's good. No, it's good.
All right.
All right. Talk of the internet. Mecum is auctioning off, I believe, at no reserve, the Bachmann Ferrari collection, which is a famous Ferrari collector. Yes, offered at no reserve. 42 different cars, mostly Ferraris. And boy, is it a collection of interesting taste. Almost everything is either red or yellow, or red and yellow.
And there's also some yellows and like a blue, and there's like a green, which you'd think maybe I'd like, but it's
not a metallic green. Yeah.
Yes.
The standout cool car, I think, is the extra Campionario.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Non-standard exterior car. It's Italian for extra
paint
money.
To sample.
Extra it's money. A green Challenge Stradale with a cream leather interior, not leather, Alcantara, sorry, cream and green. I kind of really love this spec. It's out there, but it's awesome. It only has 375 miles, so that is going to be a new mark for the Challenge Stradale market. I would guess close to $1 million because of the hype, the delivery miles. I think
color.
Probably if we're betting, like people that bet on this stuff, they'd set the high low, the over under, at $1 million. Would you take over or under, Tyler?
I think it's going to go over. Green is so hot right now.
Okay. I guess I'll take under then. We'll see what it goes for.
What about this, like, the 612 Sesenta, which...
ultra beige.
Yeah, like ultra beige. My goodness.
It's baby puke brown over poop brown.
It's like somebody wanted to make this a Maybach.
And both of those colors are outside. It's not like that's the exterior interior combination. It is two-tone exterior awfulness.
It is. This is wild.
They did make a Maybach in similar combination, and it was some special edition that doesn't make it any better.
This is like... it's awful.
Oh, no. It's apparently the top is yellow. It just looks like puke brown next to the other brown. It is giallo over bronzo Monte Carlo.
Well, like, so I guess the Sesenta is commemorating Ferrari's 60th anniversary. It's, of course, got the luggage. It's got some award.
The interior color is Terra Bruciata, which I think is like earth tomato.
Oh, man, this is wild.
It's crazy. So go check that out if you want to be entertained. The standout things I thought was funny is a couple of them had luggage, factory luggage with them, and the car had 80 miles on it. Yeah. So I'm like, you're bragging about luggage, but literally you're saying this has never been used. I bought this thing to be an attachment to a car, to say yes. I have the luggage and literally have never used it because the car has never gone far enough for an overnight stay. To me, that just screams, what is the point of no-mile cars?
And all of these things have such low miles.
Yes.
Even the first Ferrari acquired by them, ordered new, is a 1984 308 GTS Quattro Valvole, and it only has 7,500 miles.
Hmm.
And they've had it since 84. Now, I understand with all of this stuff, what are you driving? You might be being driven. Who knows? But like, ooh, man.
Then a random, this is a pretty cool spec, a 99 355 Spider Siri Fiorano. The only one produced in this unique color combination. That doesn't really need to be said about any of their collection. Nobody is picking that, but I kind of like this spec. I like yellows and blues together. This one is yellow over blue with the carbon racing seats. I could do without the yellow centers in the racing seats, but otherwise, this is a fantastic spec. And it seems like when he started out, so he's got the Ferrari supercars, which is pretty cool, but the older cars are just red. And then they go yellow with red interiors with yellow accents and red tops and this crazy stuff kind of in the mid-2000s, including a 575 with racing stripes, which just it doesn't work.
And the interior is just like the most ostentatious blue and yellow alternate. Like it hurts to look at.
And then like mid-2010s, they have just as many options, but they seem toned down a little bit. It's almost as if Ferrari said, we'll take your money, but you got to dial it back.
I'm going to need you to cool it.
So anyway, there's some great cars in here. Again, it's his money, his taste. I'm really curious how many of these very, very interesting spec cars will exceed prices just because they're crazy specs. Like if you think about the, I think it's the Michael Fuchs collection, his cars were equally crazy specs, but not in terms of being outlandish. They just had every possible special option known to man and were all very unique specs, but typically they were also beautiful. These are beautiful to the Bachmans, but some of them are yikes. They're out there. We got a... here's an interesting article. Washington State Patrol to find speeding hotspots using harvested phone data. We've talked about flock cameras and how they're using our data. And now Washington State Police is doing this. However, it is actually not as bad as you would think reading the initial article.
Okay.
They're using apparently anonymous data. They are not actually saying like, oh, Tyler was driving here at 80 miles an hour and then sending you a ticket. They're using, you know, just the overall data to say, here's where the most people are speeding and at what time. So we're going to put manual enforcement in those spots. Kind of like the opposite of what we do with Waze. Waze has the hot spots. Well, Waze doesn't. If you use highway radar, which aggregates all the Waze data, then it shows the hot spots of like, this is where cops are most often reported. So it's not quite as bad as we think.
But that's still just, oof, that's not data they should have.
I don't like it, but it's not as bad as a sensational headline or what we all kind of assumed going into it. You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Now, oh boy, EVs, once again, I read an article recently that was a deep dive on Lucid's finances. We'll call it Lucid Isn't Liquid.
Huh. Yeah.
And, you know, for all the numbers and data that was in it, I wasn't expecting this, but it read like a comedy. I laughed so hard reading this, and I don't know if I should have, but it's pretty funny. Not them failing, that's not funny, but how
catastrophic, how intense the size of the numbers,
the fact that we called this, and so many people have called it, and we're just idiots on a podcast, and all these people with finance degrees and high levels of knowledge of how these things work predicted things so differently from how they are turning out. And we're just over here pontificating about how this is probably the whole EV bet isn't going to work out. Look at Ford, by the way. $20 billion it's going to cost them, which is more than their entire profit the last 3 years to unwind their EV bet and go away from EVs. And Jim Farley, I respect that guy as much as I can respect an American car company CEO. It's like, oh, well, we're following purchasers' desires rather than what, you know, we thought they would want. I was like, well, that's not a good CEO. A good CEO should be able to lead ahead of the curve and go, I don't care what the government's doing, what are the other manufacturers are doing. I don't think this is going to work out because people aren't going to want it. So we're not going to invest all this money in it. A great CEO would have the gumption to do that and then go, ha, 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 I was right. This is why I get paid tens, hundreds of millions of dollars. But any CEO now can go, oh, gee, we're losing money and not selling them. Let's pivot and respond to consumers' demands. Okay.
Well, and it's kind of crazy that the $20 billion, and I don't know if I feel like I have seen some articles, but I can't remember any numbers, so I'm not going to try, about what it's going to cost Porsche to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
These are
GM
wild amounts of money.
Everybody.
And it just kind of seems, I don't roll in like financial circles, but it's kind of like, well, this really sucks and it, you know, whatever, but this is what we got to do. Like everybody's doing it. So it seems less bad, I guess. It's crazy.
Well, let's dive into Lucid. This comes from one of my favorite sources, SSOReport.com. Some really great in-depth
yes.
dives on the business side of boutique car manufacturers and supercar manufacturers. Fantastic, fantastic reads, usually. Again, sometimes get into the weeds, but that's what we're here to do is pull the weeds and only give you the roses. I don't know. Sorry. There's a lot of thorns in these flowers. Okay, so Lucid went public via a reverse merger in July 2021.
How does that work? Is that not just a split?
I don't know.
Is that what a divorce could be called? Is it reverse merger? Like,
I don't... It's like a reverse mortgage. Yeah, the worst deal on the planet. We're going to loan you back your money at an exorbitant rate. At the time of the merger, Lucid was projecting annual vehicle sales of 135K units, revenue of $14 billion, gross profit of $3.1 billion, net income of $632 million, and EBITDA of $1.7 billion in 2025.
This article we're also projecting 135,000 views on every YouTube video in 2030.
Projections are garbage. You can make up anything. And yeah, this is what we're going to do. We'll base it on reality. Looking back, I love this quote. Looking back, ambitious would be one way to look at these targets. Delusional would be another. While Lucid is slowly growing vehicle sales and revenue, they will be lucky to hit 10% of the original projections in 2025 on both. Lucid has now racked up roughly $14.8 billion of accumulated losses or about $475,000 of loss for every car it has ever delivered.
Whew.
I think that's more than it cost Bugatti for each Veyron, and they plan to lose money because it was essentially an engineering challenge for
yeah.
them.
Man. Yeah. That is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on top of the car costing, like, I don't know. Was it like 200, 100K, 150? Years?
Let's see. This September 25, they did a 1-for-10 reverse split. And after the stock had lost around 97% of its value since it peaked in 2021 Ooh. When it went public, the stock is down another 30% since then. Lucid's factories are running at under 20% of capacity. Now, I want to pause here. The same article talked about Aston Martin, Lotus. Another article he wrote talked about Ineos. This is not unique to EVs. Obviously, we're focusing on EVs because we love internal combustion and we think it's the way forward. We do not think EV is the way forward. It is an alternative power source, but everybody's losing money. Their sales were largely driven by government subsidies. However, the small boutique manufacturers are all going through the same thing right now. Their sales are struggling. Aston Martin has almost never made money. A lot of these companies have, you know, kind of revived. Lotus brought the Emira back, was banking on heavy U.S. sales. Tariffs came out. They didn't sell that many. And their EV, again, their Chinese-built EV has not done so well. So, and they keep getting new investors. Oh, yeah, we're going to make money. And then they don't. So these small manufacturers have been struggling with this for a long time and are continuing to struggle with it. And one of our favorite podcast guests and, I guess, advisors, Myron Vernis, who's a very, very smart guy, said early on when we were talking about EVs, is this is not unlike the early age of automobiles, period. In the early 20th century, new car companies were coming on the scene one after another. Everybody thought they could make a company or could manufacture a car, or everybody saw all the money that investors were pouring into them and thought, well, I want a piece of that action.
And that has to be like, the fact that companies like Lucid, it doesn't have to be only them, are losing so much money. I have a feeling at some point there's going to be studies done about how much money in this period has just evaporated into thin air.
And you can't spell evaporated without EV.
But it is insane to me the hype that is behind all of these different manufacturers and the money that just seems to disappear. You had mentioned Lucid's their manufacturing capacity. They're only using 20% of it, mm-hmm. and they keep opening up new manufacturing facilities.
Yeah.
Like, is it all just about the hand waving? Ooh, hey, don't look at the lack of sales behind the curtain. Focus over here at this new stuff. Please give us more money.
Rivian did the same thing.
It's just the only reason that these companies can continue to exist is with investment funding. And eventually that's going to run out. And all of those people are going to be pretty pissed. The money's gone poof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't understand how you can still be putting money to it at this point. It obviously isn't working.
Well, like Rivian got that grant and they got $5 billion from Volkswagen Auto Group. And they built a plant in Atlanta that would allow them to produce, I think, 400,000 vehicles per year. But they were only at 10 or 20% of capacity of their original plant. And it's like, why are we doing this now? This doesn't make any sense. Oh, well, future growth. Okay.
Yeah, but
okay.
Going from like what you're making, you're adding a digit or two onto like all these, your total capacity. It's wild. It doesn't make any sense.
All these people in $1,000 suits and, you know, multi six figure finance degrees. And, you know, we saw this coming. Anyway, so back to not Ineos, not Fisker, back to Lucid.
Hey, we'll get there.
Yes. $475,000 cost per vehicle delivered. Stock has lost 97% of its value and then another 30%. Now their new car is called the Gravity.
Ah.
It's like AI where the jokes write themselves. The stock is dropping like, well, Gravity. It's as ironic of a name as the Fisker Ocean, which there's a lot of jokes there, too. The first round of Fisker was kind of ultimately destroyed by the ocean when they lost a whole fleet of Karmas in Hurricane Sandy.
Okay.
That wasn't the root cause, but it was a straw that broke the camel's back. You could say Fisker waved goodbye to their funds.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They had zero liquidity.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So... yeah, the stock drops like it met gravity, and here we go again. And Lucid is losing money on an ongoing basis. You could say, oh, well, you've got all this R&D cost. They'll eventually recoup it with increased sales because, of course, that's what Lucid is saying they're going to do is increase sales. But it's not happening. Their 2025 sales were slightly better than 2024 through third quarter, but again, a lot of that was likely driven by the incentives expiring because everybody who wanted an EV seemed to buy one then. But they need to essentially double their sales from the entire first three quarters of 2025. They need to sell that many cars again in the last quarter to meet their already downward revised guidance for 2025.
Goodness. Sorry, I was very distracted looking at the graph of the Lucid Group stock price. this is staggering. First of all, the stock is $12 right now, which feels insane to me.
Would it make a good sledding hill?
Very much so, because, you know, you have a really high peak and then a sharp downturn, and then it kind of peters out into just flatness at the end. A slight slope downwards.
It's a toboggan run.
It would be a great time in a sled.
That would be a good name for their next car, toboggan.
Doug, the stock was at $552 a share in November of 2021.
That's so bad. I don't mean to laugh at misfortune, but it's not misfortune. When you open yourself up to this, you take on so much debt, so many investors off of a pipe dream. Okay. However, back to the R&D thing. You could say, well, if they sell more cars, they'll make money. But according to SSO, Lucid loses money on every car before it even gets to R&D, SG&A, and interest expenses. So the first 9 months of 2025, the cost of revenue was about $1.6 billion against $0.83 billion of revenue. So $2 to $1. This is terrible. Gross margin year to date is -100%.
Oh, whoa.
Before operating expenses. This is like old Carvana numbers.
Man.
So they say, oh, well, we'll sell more cars and we'll get there. But the more cars they sell, the more money they lose. This is like, it's like the Michael Scott paper company. Where they go to the accountant and he says, you can't afford to sell more paper. And they go, well, crunch the numbers again. Lucid wants the investors to crunch the numbers again and keep pouring money into them. But golly, it's to me, it is very Lucid.
Whoa.
their financial picture. Yeah.
Man, those numbers are just like so hard to grasp. They're so large.
Somebody's choosing willingly to pour money into this company. It's nuts. We talked about crazy BAT, bring a trailer comments last week. Yes. We had a few fresh ones we wanted to share with you this week for a maybe ongoing segment. We'll see how it goes. But our comments of the week on auctions were great. One of them on a 4GT. This is what everything I don't like about car sales and car sales people when they try to sell you on the investment potential of the car. The seller says, quote, this will be the car everyone says I wish I had bought. Immediate 100K asset value on the buy easily.
That was the seller?
That was the seller.
Why aren't you keeping it?
Exactly.
I don't understand.
Cars are not all of a sudden worth 100K more than you pay for them on a public auction.
That on the public auction generally means that's about market price.
That is a data point that sets the value. Like, it's yucky. What just, it's so dumb. So dumb. Another one, this is a common theme, yeah, this was a good one. Quote, if I didn't already have 8 cars, I'd be bidding on this one.
That's it's just a flex. You're like, oh, look at me. I'm so cool. I got 8 cars. Ugh, all over the place.
But there was a great one.
Oh, this one's so good.
Great one.
So there was an awesome spec 996 GT3 in midnight blue. And of course, everybody likes to say the 996 GT3 is the real like drivers. Who's him? What's it? Well, this guy in the comments really had a strong opinion. The 996 GT3 is like your Marlboro smoking World War II veteran grandpa who would chop wood with an axe shirtless in 30 degree weather. A 992 GT3 is his great grandson who uses one of those crystals for deodorant and orders kindling from Amazon.
It reminds me of the hipster meme. You know, the flannel shirts and skinny jeans were a thing for the oiled beards, and it looked like, you know, somebody that was trying to look like they were from Maine but had only read an L.L. Bean catalog.
Yeah.
And the caption is, it's a really good thing I don't have to actually hunt because I have no friggin' idea where gluten-free tacos live. So he's saying that's the 992 GT3 owner. Sorry to everybody who owns one. I know a lot of car people own it, but it's a good contrast. I like it. I like
it's amazing.
The analogy and the hyperbole.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield Well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast. Alrighty, you lovely listeners out there are bound to have heard the phrase or have seen the phrase on the internet, just LS swap it or LS swap the world, because it's everywhere. Everybody makes it seem like this is such an easy thing to do. You have any sort of issue, you have an unreliable car, slap in an LS and you're golden. Have you ever done this, Doug?
I've used the hashtag.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, no, I have. I LS swapped a Monte Carlo, which should have been super easy because, right, GM to GM.
Well, I'm going to ask you to put a pin in the should because I think that's what I'm about to get into.
The Top Gear quote, how hard can this be, went through my head when I had a $500 Monte Carlo and a $2,500 LS1.
That is exactly what the internet says should be a match made in heaven, a recipe for success.
Okay. Well, so, should you do it? We talked last week about stick swapping and whether or not you should do that. That was a resounding yes. Where are we going to land on LS swaps, Tyler?
So I want to put a caveat at the beginning of this that I am not necessarily talking to the mechanics out there that can do this in their sleep or want the challenge or think it's cool and interesting to swap an LS into something. If you want to do this for the sake of having an LS in a car that you like, cool. Where I'm coming from is the vibe that has kind of taken place on the internet or is formulated on the internet is that this is an easy solution, and it is not an easy solution to an unreliable car. So there's two cars that I want to focus on for this discussion, which are RX-7s, rotaries, and M96 and M97 Porsche 911s.
Hmm.
Two,
not Subaru WRX STIs, those fail too.
They do, but I feel like I see it a lot when you have people complaining about reliability or the concerns around reliability with these two specific cars. Everybody's like, just put an LS in it.
So we're not talking about Miatas, because LS swap Miatas are the bomb.
That would be sick.
Yes.
But that isn't to solve a problem. That's like, I want, unless the problem is not enough power in a Miata.
The problem is I want the world's greatest track car for less than 30 grand.
Does it actually fit?
People do it all the time, yeah. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not an LS. People do. There is a V8 swap one. I'm quite sure it's LS. People do 944s. That's a popular one. That's a very popular one.
So I did not include that on purpose because that is something that has been like people like do that for racing because they like the chassis of the 944, but they want the like ease of maintenance and known quantities of an LS. I think those probably, honestly, 944s came before the M96 and M97 911s in terms of like, well, this is expensive to maintain. I think they're pretty reliable. They're just expensive to maintain.
Sure.
And it's not worth it.
Okay. So rotaries and M96s.
Yes.
Should we or shouldn't we?
So the first thing I want to talk about is cost. Doug, you had a $500 car and a $2,500 engine?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the other way? And that sounds cheap. But I don't know if people on the internet don't value their time or don't know how to value their time. It's expensive to do this. There are companies that if you want this experience, they will do an engine swap for you turnkey. So there's a company, Chavis Performance Engineering, that are they're in Baltimore, Maryland. They offer this for 996 and 997 911s for $40,000.
Whoa!
You get a 24-month, 36,000-mile warranty.
And I don't need a warranty
turnkey
on an LS.
Well, I think you might, because they can fail, just the same as anything else. Because you're mounting an LS backwards.
Okay.
So there's potentially oiling issues and like, there's stuff. It's not a magic, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a magic wand. There's companies that do RX-7s. These are much cheaper for some reason. Siki
I feel like
Manufacturing.
It's more of a natural fit in the RX-7.
I agree. Where are these folks located? Siki Engineering is also located in Maryland. That was not on purpose. They'll do an RX-7 for $25,000.
There's a local company here too. I will look them up while you're talking, that specializes in LS swaps, and they do a lot of RX-7s. They're in Medina. Nice.
I feel like the RX-7 is kind of the thing, because nobody knows how to maintain a rotary, or it's very difficult to find a shop that will do it for you. It's, you know, difficult to learn. So I understand it a little bit more, but my point is that it's not $5 to put this reliable American lump in the back of your sports car. There's a lot that goes into it. There's custom wiring that needs done. There's custom parts that need fabricated. Even if you can buy a kit, and this is like a known quantity, things just cost money and they take time.
Backstreet Performance.
Nice.
They do LS1, LS2 swaps into Miatas and RX-7s and all sorts of stuff.
Miata would be so, I want to drive
I had them do an LS swap for me. I had them swap an LS for an LS in a Corvette.
Okay, nice.
It doesn't really count, but...
But still, there are companies that can do this. So if this is something that you really want an RX-7 to feel like a Corvette, you can make that happen. The other thing that from the cost perspective is auction results. It was pretty tough to find auction results of swapped cars. I found some really well done 996s that went in like the mid to low 30s with like kind of a ton of miles, but painted good colors, and the swap was extremely well done, really well documented. So the enthusiasts that wanted that experience are out there. It seems like RX-7s kind of, they're a little bit harder to find LS swaps, I guess, because people just keep driving them. They do okay. They do about the same as a normal car. So all of this has to be a labor of love if you're doing this, because there seems to be next to no financial benefit to having one of these in your car. And I think you also need to explain away who did the swap. Was it done well? What parts did you use? Yada, yada, yada. You want the history.
What is the weight difference between an LS and a rotary?
Aren't rotaries light?
Probably. I'm asking you. You're the expert on this topic tonight. That would be one of my reasons for doing it, is if you're saving a ton of weight, then you can change the balance of the car and improve it from that perspective. But for me, at least an FD RX-7, well, they're all rotaries. That's a pointless comment. The FD RX-7 is the one I would want, but the personality of the rotary and the sound is why I would buy that car. So yes, despite the lack of reliability, I don't think I'd want to swap it. And I think the same is true for me with a flat six.
That is more of my opinion. This is why I would not want to do this, because I believe a flat six is most of what makes a 911. It's the type of engine and where it's located that make a 911. Same thing for a rotary. That is an RX-7. Now, if you think they just look cool and you don't care what's powering it, that's another option. Sweet. But to me, the engine is a critical piece of the soul and the feeling of a car. And I want that car for what it is.
What if your engine fails? What do you do? What's the cost benefit analysis then? Is it better to swap in an LS or to put a new rotary or new M96, M97 engine in? Because at that point, the ROI, if they sell for about the same amount, then you're looking at, okay, well, what does it cost me to put in an LS versus a rebuilt factory engine?
So this is something that there is a company that does really, in my opinion, what seems to be incredibly high quality rebuilds of M96 engines. That's Flat Six Innovations in Georgia, I believe. If you've been on any sort of forums, you know who Jake Raby is and who that company is. And they'll like bore it out to 4 liters if you want, obviously for a ton more money. But from what I've been able to find, every situation is different. The cost of parts, whatever, you know, it's tough to find pricing. It costs just about as much or maybe a little more to rebuild your engine properly if you have an M96 than it would to put an LS in it, unless you're doing it yourself and just not counting labor. Like, it's kind of the same. So it depends on what you want from your car. If you say, screw this, I don't want to deal with it anymore, I'm cool with a V8 sounding 911, then go for it. But if you want what, in my opinion, the car should be, then you go down the route of either a crazy rebuild, like something from Flat Six Innovations, or something of just like kind of doing, maybe not everything, but rebuilding the critical things that have failed.
Interesting. See, that's where I would have thought okay, if you're going to do one or the other, obviously to me it doesn't make sense to take a perfectly good engine and swap it for an LS. That's crazy. But if you have a roller, do you go factory or do you go LS? I would think the reason for going LS is not only the long-term reliability, but, oh, it's going to cost half. But that's not, you're saying that's not the case.
I guarantee you the comments on this video are going to say, Tyler, you're an idiot. It only costs me a 12 case of Natty Light and three hot dogs to my buddy to swap an LS into my 911. And it's like, that doesn't count.
Well, that's because they all said you were an idiot for how much it costs you to maintain your 996. Yes. Did you go to the Porsche dealership? It only cost me $50 every 7 years to drive my 997 because I did everything myself. Okay, great.
Yes, if you have a shop worth of tools and a lift and the time. I like to work on my own cars when I can because I feel like I form an extra level of a bond with I have done something, I've fixed something, I have added or changed something. I would rather spend the time driving my cars than having it on jack stands for a summer because I'm trying to do it myself. To me, that's not worth the time it takes is not worth the change in money. So that's where I would go with kind of a rebuild thing. And if you do it yourself, again, I'm not talking to you specifically. I'm talking to the folks that kind of think this is an easy solution if they're in a tough situation with a broken engine or they're scared of reliability concerns.
And I would push back, circling back to me swapping an LS into a General Motors product. It became a project. It's not about the engine itself. An LS 1, 2, 3 essentially is a bulletproof engine. It's all the other stuff. You're changing the wiring harness. You have re-engineered or custom engineered parts, motor mounts, transmission mounts. You've got to cut things. Yes. Stuff is making contact that shouldn't be making contact. It wasn't meant to be this close to the header. You have all these other things around the engine when you create a project that then adds unreliability to it. And that was my issue with the Monte Carlo. It's like every corner, even though you could buy almost everything out of the JEGS catalog, it still didn't fit. We still had to cut stuff and bend stuff and weld stuff and custom do wiring and these crazy fabricated brackets to move the power steering mount and move this and move that. And then the bolts on the bracket failed and you know, it's just this stuff isn't tested the way factory parts are. So you're constantly like going through a teething process of all the stuff around the engine that is breaking and failing and rattling and even just minor modifications. I have a stroked LS in my Corvette and my goodness, and it's a Lingenfelter thing. Like it's been around
just like
forever,
the name.
But it's just all this minutia of different headers, slightly different routing of stuff, you know, less heat shields, whatever. Constant stupid issues with this car that I never had on my stock Corvette. And it's actually somewhat of a high maintenance car. And it's essentially it's just a stroked LS. Everything else is factory.
And it's what I think people like to forget on the internet, whether it's because it's fun to say, you know, crazy things to get attention or as a joke, is regardless of maybe some mistakes that some companies have done to cause some of the unreliabilities in these cars we're talking about, there is a team of people engineering this engine to work in this car, just like there is a team of people engineering an LS to go into a Corvette or into a truck or into anything else. And they take care of the stuff that you were talking about, Doug, to make it reliable for 100,000 miles or usable for 100,000 to, you know, however long or whatever testing they do. It is just not feasible to expect that same level of rigor from a lot of this stuff that is made by people who are just enthusiasts doing something cool and maybe something seems to be fantastic. And then it fails, you know, it seems to be this bracket made with the high quality materials and these awesome bolts. Well, something is different. There's strain on something there shouldn't be. And then how are you going to get it fixed? You can't just take it to a shop that specializes in Porsches unless they know LSs too. Or RX-7s, and that you can't, like, maybe a Corvette shop could work on, or work on your swapped RX-7, but who knows? It's maybe they don't want to touch it because it's too risky. There's just a lot of stuff to consider, and it's a lot more trouble than I think a lot of people believe it to be when they just say, ah, slap an LS into it. Problems are gone.
Well, great, great conclusion, Tyler.
I can't wait for the comments to tell me I'm an idiot.
Well, you know. So at least they won't be making fun of your beard experiment.
Yeah.
On to our ever popular plate to sample game brought to us by Dr. Alan Hoover of Solon Spine. We thank you. We thank him for his idea. He was the genesis of this game and also the ongoing financial support for this game. So, a couple quick stories leading up to this. So not all vanity plates are approved. And Ohio has released their list of over 840 plates that were rejected this year.
Love it.
And
there's some wild there's stuff some wild on ones. List.
Slow Mofo, Love Meth.
Yes, lots of drug, alcohol, and...
Old Fart. I don't know why they... I can't believe they let that one... Or didn't let that one go.
Making fun of yourself.
AZ Hat. Hope it was on a Colin Vic. And I don't think the person's from Arizona. We'll just leave it there.
Uh-huh.
Lolita?
I don't understand that one.
I don't either. There's some great ones. There's some also very, very, very inappropriate ones. I am scrolling through them. Can't read that. Can't read that. Can't read that. Can't read that.
I have a feeling... I don't. Are some people just submitting these because they think it? They're just trying to get something through. Somebody submitted cranking off. Amazing.
Yeah, brother.
The problem is some of these. I'm like, oh, I think that's kind of funny, but I don't want to read them because I'm not all up on like the Urban Dictionary and stuff. Yeah. So I'm not sure if they're. Innocent or not. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny. But the homeschooler me is like, well, I might not know the actual meaning of that. So I can't read it.
I think somebody submitted a family of cards. Rich AF, Rich AF 2, and Rich AF 3 all got denied.
Mob Life.
Nice.
For Booby.
I mean.
I don't know if... That's an odd operation. You got an extra pair. Maybe that's not what they were going for.
Ooh, boy, some of these are nuts.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see the unedited list, you can do so on the Columbus Dispatch website. But Oof. Another honorable mention, speaking of rejective plates, Canada is extra soft on... their tolerance here. A submission from Eric on Instagram says that a driver in Kamloops, Canada, got his 5-0 plate recalled for being, quote, offensive and, quote, referencing law enforcement. I think 5-0 was one of your vanity plate to samples, wasn't it, that you had me guess?
Yeah, I think so, because it was on, like, a Crown Vic or something.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it was
referencing law enforcement. That's ridiculous. How is that offensive?
I don't know. I don't know. But with that said, let's get to our approved plates that were on actual cars. I've got 4. Tyler, you probably have 5. So why don't you start?
I do have 5. First,
the name
up,
of the game, plate to sample. Yes. Sorry to interrupt you. Is we read off a vanity plate and the other person has to guess what car it's on. See how the stereotypes. See how obvious the stereotype is. Go ahead, Tyler.
I might only have 4 because I might have done this one before, but we're going to do it again. Crime with a 3.
BMW M3.
Yeah, it is.
You have done that one before.
Shoot. Son of a, sorry, Ethan, cut it out. Fix Ultima. It in post.
Okay, here's a, I almost literally said, here's a white with a plate.
But continue, Doug. What is it?
This one comes to us from, I gotta zoom out, .2lava on Instagram. This is a great one. Gone Postal or Going Postal.
Is this a Grumman?
No, I wish it was.
That would be sweet.
That would be great.
Gone Postal. Is it a Jeep? Is it like a right-hand drive Jeep?
Nope.
Oh, well, they're referencing probably the fact that it was... Jeeps have been used by the Postal Service.
No, it's a lifted Jeep Wrangler Rubicon. So I think they're just referencing like their pent up angst their, or something like that.
Edgy disposition. Coming to you from Nathan K. Not a mom.
Toyota Sienna.
No.
Honda Odyssey.
No.
Any You're, other minivan. Soccer actually, mom. A Chevy Suburban.
It is a soccer. I think this could be considered a soccer mom car. It is a BMW X3, I think. I almost said X9. How embarrassing.
Real moms don't drive compact SUVs.
Woo.
Gonna crawlers. Offend somebody with that one. That's like the, yeah, I don't know. Okay, here's a great one. Texas plate, blessed. Or blessed.
Blessed is on a Murano, I think. I've seen it on a Murano.
No.
Too bad it's not Ethan's. Blessed. What is blessed going to be on? Is it on a Mercedes SUV?
Yes.
Yes. All right. I don't know what could probably like ML. I don't know.
No, it is on a matte black Brabus G-Wagon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. They That's not the Mercedes I was thinking of.
I know. Typically those plates are on like base spec.
Yes.
C-Class. But nope, this person apparently is pretty blessed.
My God.
Financially, anyway, that doesn't mean anything in you know, real life, but yeah.
Next up for you, Doug, from John Z, I've got late to yoga, and there is a namaste sticker on the window, and there is a namaste plate frame.
That's a Subaru.
It is not. You were so jazzed. I'm so sorry, Doug.
Is it a jazz?
No, no, that'd be awesome. This is more of like a California. Like a, LA kind of
Tesla.
Nah, closer. It is a Q7. Audi Q7.
All right.
Big,
all right.
Beefy SUV.
Okay. Probably wouldn't have got there. Let's see. Alabama plate. Cute AF.
Is this a smart car or like a Toyota Matrix?
Nope.
Cute AF. Is this an Altima?
No.
Ah, okay.
Mustang GT convertible.
No, that tracks. That's kind of in the vibe that I was thinking. I would not have gotten there, though. I don't
think. The top was up, though. I feel like you got to have the top down to be accountable to that plate.
Yeah, because are you saying the car's cute or you're cute?
I think it's them.
Ah, well,
so you got to roll top down and let everybody else be the judge of that.
Yeah, they're just, oof.
The Bible says, let another's words praise you, not your own.
Ha, and they're really using their own words to praise themselves.
Yes.
Eesh. I'm going to put ugly AF on my plate. LS Tree. For you, Doug, from Matthew S.
Is it an RX-7 that got LS swapped?
It is not. That would have been very
isn't
topical.
Isn't it a 3-rotor?
LS
Tree? Never mind.
I think this car has an LS-3.
Okay. Or it's a like a Chevy C10 pickup truck that got LS swapped because it had three on the tree, LS tree. I'm stretching for the double entendre here.
I really wish it was that creative. It's just a Corvette.
Let me guess it's one with an LS2.
Huh? I don't know. No. It's a blue C6.
Okay.
That's all I got.
If it's 08 or later, I think that's an LS3, but I don't know. Okay. Here's one from Dave Marr. 4Q Moolah.
4Q.
So either they made a lot of money selling forks.
Okay.
Or they're talking about fourth quarter financials.
Ah. Could be the bonus that got them the car.
I literally keep looking at my empty glass.
Would you like more? There's a wine key, Doug.
After you guess this.
It's a beautiful cork removal device.
For Moolah.
This has got it. Is this another G-Wagon?
No.
Is this a Lamborghini?
Yes.
Ooh, is it? It's a Huracan or an Aventador.
It's a Huracan
nice.
STO.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll
good
take
job,
it.
Tyler. Excellent.
All right, excellent. Doug. Last one. From Andrew D. This is a Maryland historic plate, which depresses me greatly.
that tells me it's a 90s car.
not quite. It's a little newer than that. Boxy boy.
2000 Porsche Boxster.
No, but that would be good.
Scion XB.
You're more correct train of thought, but cooler car.
what car is cooler than a Scion XB?
Volvo V70R.
Oh, yes, that's very cool.
I like it's a good. I just can't believe it's historic. Oh, get me out of this.
We're getting old.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio, where you can experience the Switch Cars difference.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.